is the Relevant Podcast.
It's episode 1022, and it's the Relevant Podcast. Here in Orlando, I'm your host, Cameron Strang, and joining me from Loverland, Virginia, is Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
From Nashville, Tennessee, artist, producer, mogul, Derek Miner.
What up?
And from Austin, Texas, artist.
I'll take it.
Podcaster, mogul, Jamie Ivey.
Hey, guys.
Hey. I am glad to be back with you guys. It's holiday season, you know, people are traveling in and out and all this kind of stuff. It's so good to be back with the whole family. Last episode was a lot of fun, but I'm still a little jet lagged from getting back from Israel. I just got back a couple of days ago, so forgive me if I'm a little slow on today's show.
Well, for a lot of people, going to the Holy Land, you know, we got to have some kind of recap. It seems like a pretty big deal to go spend a week in Israel, especially this time of year.
Yeah. I was a guest of the Israeli Ministry of Tourism, actually. And so I've been several times to the Holy Land, but it was always for stories and, you know, a conflict or whatever. And this was just literally like, let's go on a religious pilgrimage. Let's go see all the holy sites and stuff. And I'll be honest with you, like I've been to like the Jerusalem holy sites, the old city, a few times, and it's very overwhelming, like just the crush of tourists and just pilgrims, and it's just not what you think. But my favorite part of Israel, we spent a lot of time in, which is the northern part up by Galilee, Capernaum and all that. I mean, really where Jesus lived and ministered and spent all of his time. The disciples were up there, and we spent like 3 or 4 days up there and saw a lot of stuff I hadn't seen before. We went up to the Golan Heights to a site called Banias, which back in the time of Jesus was a temple to the god Pan. And this huge Greek temple was built out of this cliff, right? And it's out of this cliff, literally, water is coming out of the rock, and that water flows and becomes the Jordan River. So this is like the very headwaters of what becomes the Jordan. And there's no spring or anything. It's literally just water that absorbs into the rock, just comes out and makes a river. It's just a bizarre thing. And so the Greeks made this temple to Pan, and the relics of it are still there. And they had like a rendering of what it looked like in the time of Jesus. But what's significant biblically about this site, it was at this was Caesarea Philippi. Mm. And this was literally at this site where Jesus, you know, this Greek pagan temple, said to Peter, upon this rock, I will build my church. And you're standing in the presence of this enormous rock. And it's just like all of a sudden, like the gospel like becomes real. And you understand why he used terminology like that, that the rock that I'm building my kingdom on is flesh and blood and will outlive any pagan monument, you know, that man could erect, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, it was really powerful. And then we spent time, you know, obviously you're on the hill where they did the Sermon on the Mount, and you can see, you know, what he's talking about. And you see the city on the hill over there. It's Tiberias. And, you know, you can like see everything. And it's, you realize how small it is and how walkable it is. But last time I was up there, there was this archaeological dig that was off the side of the road. And somebody pointed out like, hey, they just found some stuff. And, you know, like there's this big dig going on. I visited the dig. This has been like 7 or 8 years now. And they built this huge thing. And what they had found is Magdala, the town that Mary Magdalene was from.
Oh, wow.
And it was like a big shipping village that they unearthed. And you can literally see the synagogues. There was two of them. It was a very affluent town. You can tell by a lot of the mosaic work in the synagogue, which did not exist outside of Rome, basically. And so like you can see the affluence, and it was a major shipping port and all this stuff. And this is where Mary Magdalene was and where Jesus walked. And you can literally like walk in the steps and see where this was, where he did this and where he did that miracle. That's awesome. And it's just like so powerful. It's so, so powerful. It's just like one of those things that like, and Galilee is so different than Jerusalem. Derek, I know you've been there, and it's like, and Jerusalem is like overwhelming and commercialized, and it's a big city, and it's just like not, you don't feel the presence the way you do up in Galilee, you know, where it's like largely untouched. I mean, it's a lot like it was back then. And to just to go out on the, what they call the Sea of Galilee, and it's actually just a big lake. It's 8 miles wide. It's fresh water. I don't know why they call it the sea. It's not, but you know, just to go there. And then we went down the Jordan River, and saw the site where literally John the Baptist baptized Jesus. I was never able to visit it before because it was in a disputed area on the border with Jordan. And they've, in the last 2 years, opened it up. And so it's the first time people can visit it now. But because it was always disputed land, like there aren't big temples and palaces built there, you know, over the years, like it feels very like it was back then. I mean, you're just going through the desert and all of a sudden you come across this oasis where John the Baptist was known to be doing his baptisms near Jerusalem. It's crazy. It was powerful. It was very, very powerful. And, you know, the whole point of it is everybody who's a believer should go visit the Holy Land at some point in their life. It makes the gospel real, you know, and like it does something to you. So I'm glad to be back. It's a lot of travel. It's 20 hours each way. So wow. Jumping back
glad
into
you're
it,
back, bro.
Man, I'm
glad you're back.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to go, and you know,
me too.
I've you know, been a follower of Christ for, you know, pretty much my whole life. So I'd love to, you know, see the historical places he visited and walk in his footsteps.
The food. Best food of your life.
Oh, yeah.
The food is unbelievable.
Yeah.
The meals are all evening long. Just having a lunch, a falafel or a shawarma or something, just in a pita. Oh, so good. So, Jesse, you said someday you want to go there. And I'll be honest with you, I was there scouting a trip for us next year. Potential trip for us next year. So idea is that we would all go and then we'd invite some of our artists and other friends, you know, and go and spend a week in the Holy Land.
Like you and Jesse, or am I invited to this
no,
too?
No, we, the podcast, we, all of us. So if our friends and partners are listening, I have now put it out publicly that this needs to happen. Let's make it happen.
Let's go.
Make it happen. Yeah.
Well, we have a great show for you today. Coming up later, we talk to a legend in the faith, a hero in the faith, Tim Keller, author, pastor Tim Keller. You don't want to miss that. Also, at the end of the show, we have a very special Christmas-themed epic battle. But stay tuned. Coming up next, it's Slices. Let's move to the kitchen. You're listening to Myja. The song is How You Like.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, it's time for
Slices.
What do you have, Jesse?
All right, I have one that's a little controversial, and some listeners might be upsetting some listeners, but I don't care because the people behind this, you might not agree with them, but they're objectively hilarious in their level of cultural trolling. They're trying to make a larger point. A lot of parents at a elementary school called Golden Hills Elementary School, it's outside of San Francisco, were outraged this week because the school is now offering a new after school club. I can't even say the name of the after school club without laughing. The After School Satan Club.
No.
Yeah, I've seen that. That's crazy.
Oh, gosh.
This is a club put on by the Satanic Temple. The same people who, I believe it was in Kansas, when there was a display of the Ten Commandments on the municipal property. You know, it was a large marble display that some donor had said the city should put up. Well, they petitioned and said, well, if they get a monument, so should we. And they were like, don't worry, it will be tasteful. And they unveiled the image of it. And it is literally a giant goat-headed demon sitting on a throne with children bowing to it. Objectively, oh my gosh, the most heavy metal and the most hilarious monument anywhere in America. Like, it is horrifying and it is massive. Like, can you imagine going to, like, you know, I got to run down to City Hall. I'm building a deck and I need to get a permit. You got to walk by a 15-foot tall goat-headed demon. Listen, it's objectively funny. It can offend your religious sensibilities, yes, but it is hilarious, as is after offering an after-school Satan club. Now, this is the work of the Satanic Temple. Now, they say outright that they don't believe in a supernatural Satan. They are not a religious organization. This is basically an exercise in exploring the limits of the government's ability to favor one religion over the other. And the reason that they're offering this club at the school is because the school now offers the Good News Club, which is an after-school Bible club for students at the school. Now, the Satanic Temple, basically, their whole mission is to challenge for lack of a better term, like the preferential treatment that Christians often get when it comes to public displays of faith. Now, whether this is after school Bible clubs, whether this is, Christian monuments in public places, the Satanic Temple, their method of sort of challenging this preferential treatment is going in and forcing those same places to give them the same treatment. Now, the right club actually does exist, but they just said they're going to, do exercises and reason and free thought, nothing overtly religious at all. But it's caused a huge uproar in the town. But the school administrators have come out and basically said, there's nothing we can do with it. Mm-hmm. Like, we understand right that this is upsetting to people, but this is what the school said in a letter to parents. By law, the district cannot discriminate against groups wishing to use the facilities or distribute flyers to students based on a viewpoint. It is very important to note, however, the district does not endorse any of the groups or the content affiliated with the groups that are host after-school events on district property. Again, I know this is probably quote unquote offend. I don't know how many people are actually, offended more than they are. Just kind of, I'm more just amused by it. I think it's a funny way to sort of troll people into being forced to think about some complicated social and religious and legal issues. But they're at it again. And I'm kind of interested to hear what your guys' take on this is.
My viewpoint is similar to yours. I obviously, like, I'm troubled by it, but then at the same time, do unto others as you've had them do unto you. And if we want to have religious clubs in the school, we have to say that we have to open up to all religions to do the same thing. You can't pick and choose. It's all or nothing. You're setting a precedence. And it's like, that's just being part of a diverse, free society, right? I mean, so there's nothing we can do about it. I mean, if we want to have Christian clubs, it's like no clubs or any clubs. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like there's no in between. So,
yeah. And religious freedom is only free if it's free for everybody.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
And hey, if you want to raise your kid to be a child of Satan, bro, it's your kid, man. That's, I don't know if that's going to, I don't know how that's going to help you as far as...
Well, they said three kids have signed up.
So I'm like, hey, when it's all said and done, man, look, I'm raising my kids under Jesus and I'm having a hard time for them to clean their room day. I'm like, man, so I don't know.
Well, like I said, they have said, listen, we are not the Church of Satan, which is actually Satanist. We, this is more or less sort of a thought experiment and a way just to, force people to reckon with, notions of religious freedom in a free society. Mm-hmm. And again, I think I'm more or less just amused every time they make the news, because I just think despite, even though I'm not advocating the spread of the principles of Satan, I do think this is a funny way to force people to have to think about this, like I said, in a way that just frankly just amuses me.
Yeah. All right. What do you have, Jamie?
Okay, so here's what I have to ask you. I'm going to start with a question real quick. Is there a celebrity that you would buy their shoes from them? Like they've gone, they passed away, and you want to own a pair of their shoes? Yes or no? No. It's a no for me. I don't understand why you like want to buy all the shoes.
Like actual shoes that they wore.
Yeah.
But I have actual shoes that like Dwight Howard and Shaq wore in a basketball game on my shelf right there.
They're alive. It's a little different.
Okay. And maybe it's a little different if like if it's an old raggedy pair of Birkenstocks that somebody wore. I think that changes it a little bit. You guys, sandals once worn by Steve Jobs, they were auctioned off for $218,000. These are shoes that look like you would pick them up at Goodwill because he wore them every single day.
Like in the 70s and 80s when he was building Apple, right?
100%.
They're old, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I bet they stink.
So they're artifacts. So it's like
they're artifacts. They go back to the mid-1970s. It's the highest price ever paid for a pair of sandals.
But this isn't like the, you know, little welding stuff he used to make the first circuit board. This was the shoes he was wearing. It's like, I don't know. You know, it just seems like a random thing.
Also, he was like a hippie.
But Cameron, your shoes, like they probably look cool on a shelf. Like you could put them on like a shoe wall or whatever. These literally look like your grandpa's Birkenstocks that he wore in the 50s. And I thought it was amazing that people paid $200,000 for a pair of sandals that Steve Jobs wore.
I mean, maybe it's because we got a big old Planet Hollywood here in Orlando and you walk in, there's just outfits everywhere. I don't think this is that weird. I mean, it's just, he's a famous person.
Money,
who
200 that iconic, racks.
That's a lot of money.
200 racks. I mean, if it was like $5,000, I could still, that's still perfect. A lot, but it's still not like 200,000.
They said they were hoping to get 60. So they were hoping for 60,000 and then the final price, over $200,000.
That feels like money laundering to me. I don't think that's...
Yeah.
Something gets, I don't know. I think there's a mob affiliation there, honey. All right. What do you have, Derek?
What I have is in our update on the Twitter apocalypse or not, depending on what you think, people are now uploading full movies onto Twitter in 2-minute increments because of a copyright policy mistake, I guess.
Breakdown.
So somebody uploaded Tokyo Drift in 2-minute increments and it took 50 posts. But first off, that's a lot of dedication, dog. Like I'm down that's with funny. Trolling, but I don't know if I could 50 posts of 2-minute increments of a movie troll. Like that's a lot.
That's
but
hilarious.
That's kind of crazy though.
It's like they're going because it used to be human monitored. And so then that whole team left and there's nobody monitoring if you're uploading copyrighted material. So they're just having a heyday right now on Twitter.
Oh, really, you just made up a great point, man. Like, so how are they monitoring?
Right.
Like, how is, Louise.
Well, why they had to shut down the verification as well, because like there wasn't anybody there to verify anything anymore. So everybody was doing impersonations and stuff. And so they shut that down for a while. It turns out you might need a staff to run a massive thing like
true.
That.
You know what? Maybe. That's a good idea. So, yeah. We need a staff.
Don't fire your people.
I know we're recording this a week before people are hearing it, but I literally saw a Twitter tweet today that the layoffs are over and we're hiring again. And it's just like, because they cut too deep and now they need to put people back the seat. So anyway.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right. That's funny. Well, there's a lot more where that came from. Go check out relevantmagazine.com for slices every day. Stay tuned. Up next, Tim Keller joins us. Don't miss it. You're listening to The Arcs. The song is Keep On Dreaming. Well, today's show is brought to you in part by Crown College, a boldly Christian and academically excellent college providing a lifelong, authentic community. Crown offers on-campus, online, and graduate programs, 18 NCAA Division III sports, international service opportunities, and a vibrant student life. Discover why Crown College is ranked top 3 in America for online Christian education. Visit crown.edu today. Well, our guest today is Tim Keller. He's a pastor, author, and hero of the faith. He sat down with our very own downtown Emily Brown to talk about what forgiveness truly looks like, how we can pursue forgiveness and justice simultaneously, and how we can be a more loving body of Christ. Here's our conversation with Tim Keller.
I'm excited to talk about forgiveness, which I love talking about because I think it needs to be talked about more. Personally, I think we could all use a bit more forgiveness in our life. Especially, I know my generation, forgiveness is a really big topic at this time, especially when it's put next to justice. And a lot of people would say, you know, we need to pursue justice over forgiveness, but you argue that there is space for both. So I'd love to know, you know, what do you mean by that? And what does that look like?
Forgiveness is not the opposite of doing justice. That actually forgiveness is not only not a contradiction of doing pursuing justice, it's actually a precondition for pursuing justice. Because if you don't forgive before you start to pursue justice, you'll actually be pursuing vengeance. The Bible has, there's a statement in the Bible that's called, it's called the Lex Talionis. Which is, a tooth for a tooth. You've heard that? Mm-hmm. Well, and the reason why that was a legal rule, a tooth for a tooth, is see, if somebody actually knocks your tooth out, comes up to you and knocks your tooth out, you don't want to turn around and just knock out their one tooth. You want to you want to knock all their teeth out. Because vengeance almost always goes beyond justice. You want the person to suffer. You want the person to hurt. In fact, you usually want them to hurt a little more than you were hurt because they started it. And so two things about vengeance. Vengeance is always goes beyond justice. Well, I'll say three things about it. It tends to usually go beyond what justice requires. Number two, it very seldom really is successful because vengeance is easy to see. So if you're going after a perpetrator and you're trying to really just make that person suffer, that person is not going to respond well to you. They're not going to repent. They're not going to admit they're wrong. They're going to see that it's a vendetta and they're just going to, you know, get their back up or even retaliate. And last of all, vengeance eats you up with anger. I mean, it just consumes you. And what you ought to do is you ought to get control of that anger by forgiving and then go pursue justice. And then you will do it well. You will do it in a just way. And a big part of the difference between vengeance and justice is motivation. That's the last thing I'll tell you here on this one. See, why do I want justice? You know, why do I want that person to admit they are wrong and maybe have some consequences? And I could be doing this for God's sake, because God is a just God. I could be doing it for even the perpetrator's sake, because it would be great to see that person change so that they don't do this again. I could be doing it for the sake of other victims so nobody else gets hurt. So I could be doing it for justice's sake, God's sake, the victim's sake, the perpetrator's sake. But in vengeance, you're doing it for your sake. It's really all about you. It's very self-absorbed. You hide behind the idea of justice, but what you're really after is, I want this person to suffer at least as much as they made me suffer. And therefore, forgiveness is changing your motives, getting control of that, and therefore making it possible for you to actually pursue justice. It's not the opposite. It's not like, if I forgive, I can't pursue justice. Who says that? Why? That's not in the Bible. Mm-hmm. Doesn't say you can't pursue justice. So that's really important, because you are absolutely right, Emily, that the average younger adult sees forgiveness as meaning I don't bring it up. I can't talk to the, I can't say anything about it anymore. And that's, I don't think that's what you see in the Bible at all. I don't think that's really how it's defined.
I kind of just want to ask point blank, is there ever a time where we don't have to extend forgiveness?
I think Jesus said no. If you use the word extend, mm-hmm. meaning, you know, even when Jesus was saying 70 times seven, you know, those places mm-hmm. where when Peter says, do we have to forgive 70, seven times? And Jesus says 70 times seven. Most commentators think that Jesus is saying, no, you always have to do it. Mm-hmm. Most people do not think Jesus is really saying you got 490. You have to do it 490 times, and the 491st time, you don't have to forgive. Almost nobody thinks he's saying that. It's a metaphor to say, no, you must always extend it. But don't forget what we just said, and that is, you forgiving internally, where you let go of the anger and you let go of the desire for vengeance, is one thing. But actually reconciling with somebody we have a relationship, that is up to them. And therefore, extending forgiveness means you keep the door open if they're willing to change, but you do not let them abuse you. So there's a sense in which, yes, I do think there is no place where you don't extend forgiveness. I mean, if you're talking about the inside. But by the way, this a book by a friend, two friends of mine, Dan Allender and Tremper Longman, some years ago, wrote a book called Bold Love. Tremper is an Old Testament biblical studies professor, and Dan was a psychologist. He's a counselor. They talked about three kinds of people: an evil person, a fool, and a regular sinner. An evil person was somebody who is very cruel and absolutely knows what they're doing. They're being cruel and they're completely deliberate, completely conscious of it. They're trying to wreak havoc. They're angry, they're bitter, and they're trying to destroy people and destroy things, and they know exactly what they're doing. A fool is somebody who is very destructive, but kind of oblivious. You know, they're proud or they're self-centered, and they're kind of like, they don't seem to realize. They feel like I'm okay and everybody else is wrong, but they're just wreaking havoc everywhere. But they don't seem to realize how bad they are, and they call them a fool. And a regular sinner is everybody else, because we're all sin. And they did say that you have to put up more barriers around the fool and the evil person. That even if you forgive them, you have to be extraordinarily clear that unless they make major changes, that there is not going to be reconciliation. So in that sense, yes, you always have to extend forgiveness inside. Yeah. But when it comes to, I don't know, I mean, that woman who was calling every Tuesday night, but that is her father. And I think that was great. I think with most people who are really evil, etc., you say, if I see a change in you, absolutely, I'd be interested in talking about a relationship, but I don't. And I'm not going to make it easy for you to get to me. I'm not going to make it easy for you at all to sin against me. And so in those cases, you, in many ways, you do withdraw. And you should, because you just don't want to become... you don't want to be grist for their evil mill.
There are many times where we need to ask someone for forgiveness. And so how can we take that step to ask for forgiveness for someone that we have hurt or wronged?
Yeah, okay. I think to start with, here's two things. One is, when you've hurt somebody else, there's always been a mixture. In other words, if you've done something wrong, usually the other person has contributed to it as well. And what you want to do is, it might be maybe 60% of the problem was them, but for only 40% was you, at least in your mind. Now, the trouble is, the other person probably thinks it's 60-40 the other direction.
Exactly.
But what you do is, you go and you admit your part. You do not say, yeah, but you did this too. You know, you just, if it's only 20% your fault, you admit the 20% and you're quiet. So I feel like I did this wrong. And then you actually ask, do you agree or have I missed something? Let them fill in what else, you know, in other words, if you say, basically you don't have to use the word repent, but basically you're saying, I repent for this. I think I really wronged you. Do you see it that way too? Would you add anything there? And sometimes the person will say, well, I think you also did this and this and this. And you try to confess and admit and repent for everything that you honestly can. The second thing you do is say, but here's a concrete way in which I'm going to try to change. I'm not just asking your forgiveness, but you do say that I repent, I ask your forgiveness. But then you say, and here's a change I'm going to make so that I don't do this again. And that's it. I think, in other words, you go talk without excusing yourself, without blaming people for other, you know, just the part that's your responsibility. You admit, you're open to them adding to it, and then you admit that. Then you ask for forgiveness, and you say, "Here's the things I'm going to try to do to change that, so this doesn't happen again." That's what I would call, that's how you ask for forgiveness.
was Tim Keller. Make sure to check out his latest book, Forgive, Why Should I and How Can I? It's out now. All right, stay tuned. Up next, it's Epic Battle. Look at me, always thinking the world, twisting and turning until we all get wound up. Fed your obsession until it hurts. Look at me, always thinking the sun won't come up. Red lights all the way, old times on your sofa. So tired, I could sleep right here. Pushing through, but we're in low gear. You're listening to Young Saab and Bear Cubs. The song is The Sun Won't Come Up. Okay, it's time for Epic Battle. Please welcome to the show our very own downtown Emily Brown. She's joining us to play this game because we got to do teams. So, hey, Emily.
Hey, y'all.
Emily, you're going to be paired up with Derek today. Be thinking of your team name. And then Jamie and Jesse, you guys are the other team. I'm coming back to Derek and Emily. What's your team name?
Seasoned Salt.
Seasoned Salt. Seasoned Salt. All right. All right. Jamie and Jesse, what's your team name?
Jesse James. Jesse Jamie.
Jesse James.
Jesse James. Jesse James. Jesse James it is. James. Okay. So the premise of Epic Battle is the internet likes to argue. Twitter likes to argue about this superhero is better than that superhero, or what? This, you know, this that soccer team is better than that soccer team. Who cares? So we just thought we would take a few Christmas related scenarios. This is a holiday themed epic battle. We would take some Christmas scenarios and pit them against each other. You guys would battle it out and we would once and for all decide the winner. So we will give you your person, we will give you the scenario, and then you guys will figure it out, or you'll make your cases, and then Jason, you're gonna pick the winner. Okay. All right. Okay, here we go. So Seasoned Salt, you have Kevin McAllister from Home Alone.
Oh, we won.
Jesse James, you guys have Letitia Wright as the Black Panther. And we want to know, between Kevin McAllister in Home Alone and Letitia Wright as a Black Panther, who would win in a game of hide and seek? Who would win in a game of hide and seek? All right. Making the case for Kevin McAllister, Home Alone, Seasoned Salt, you're up first. Tell us your opening statement.
All right. I mean, we've seen Home Alone, you know,
right.
Like Kevin McAllister, he is literally hidden from two kind of doofuses, but still, like, he is good at hiding from anybody. And he can set booby traps to really make it seem like he's in a place, but he's not. Like, he is creative.
Right.
He is innovative. So if anyone's going to be able to hide from anyone, it's Kevin McAllister.
Okay.
He is from his whole family, really.
All right. Okay. Jesse James, what's your rebuttal? Why is Letitia Wright as a Black Panther? Why would she win in the game of hide and seek?
One, if Kevin McAllister was good at hiding, Home Alone would be a very boring movie. He would have just hid the whole time. But instead, he decided to defend the house. We wouldn't even have a movie if Kevin knew how to hide. If he knew how to hide, he would have just hidden and evaded the robbers. Meanwhile, Letitia Wright, sure, I haven't seen Wakanda Forever yet, but I know enough about the Black Panther franchise to know the entire premise of the movie, that Letitia Wright and her family hid an entire nation from the entire world for all of its existence. She wasn't just hiding herself. She was hiding the entire nation of Wakanda. Wow. Uh-huh. You're telling me she can't out-hide a kid who couldn't even hide from two of probably the dumbest villains in all of movies he could not evade, okay? She hid an entire country.
All right, what's your rebuttal, Derek? What's your rebuttal?
Listen, I'm going to say this. They got all this tech in Wakanda. Listen, I watched Wakanda Forever, and I felt like I was in Wakanda. But I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to tell you this right now. Ain't nobody finding Kevin McAllister unless he wanted to be found. That was the whole thing of the whole movie. Right. When you look at it,
he had to sleep in the attic.
He wanted to smoke. He was like, listen, if a little kid can take out two grown adults with some doggone Christmas ornaments, some tar and a nail, right? When he could have just hid, he was letting y'all know the whole time in the movie that he was just playing with them the whole time, bro. He was hiding. Mm-hmm. He really just wanted to smoke. Like, bro said, he bought that action. Have you seen what Macaulay Culkin looked like in real life? We ain't seen Macaulay Culkin for 20 years. We ain't know where Macaulay Culkin was hiding for the past 20 years since the movie came out. He was one of the most successful little child actors in the world. So I'm saying he was hiding, like, bro, come on. What is we talking about, bro? Kevin McAllister all day. And I hate this. And I hate to choose somebody over Wakanda. But look, let y'all know. Kevin McAllister.
All right, what's your final statement, Jamie?
Well, my final statement is, if we're going to talk about Kevin McAllister, Kevin, in Home Alone, playing hide and seek, I don't think he knows the rules very well either. Like, he just wasn't good at it because he did everything for the worst villains in the world to come back.
Because he wanted to smoke.
He put the people in the window. Yep. You know, he was like, he just wasn't. I still think that Jesse, like, I don't, if Jason picks Kevin McAllister over a woman hiding an entire nation and a kid who, like, was playing games and watching old movies and all kind, like, I don't even know where Jason is. I'm
this
mad,
the problem.
Actually.
How you hide a whole nation? It wasn't the fact that Wakanda didn't exist and people didn't know about Wakanda. It's white folks didn't know about Wakanda in the movie. Everybody, but Black Panther was out here whooping black folks all across Africa in a suit with some clothes. Like, it wasn't a fact. That's what I'm saying.
She's still hiding it from somebody.
Yeah, she's still pretty good at hiding.
It's pretty easy to hide black stuff from white folks. Y'all don't be knowing what we own. Y'all, by the time white folks catch on to a black dance, we done moved on to 12 other dances. You talking about a nation in Africa.
Well, you're just making our point for us, Derek. She would have won against Kevin McAllister.
She would hide it from the white Kevin.
It's just white folks is late. Look, y'all couldn't even find Kevin McAllister.
All right, listen, I'm a big Home Alone fan. You know, I love Home Alone, but I'm just gonna be honest with you. Jesse James really took this one.
All right, Letitia Wright as a Black Panther.
The hiding the nation thing, like, that didn't even cross my mind. So that was
pretty good. That was Jesse, good, I ain't gonna lie, bro. It was a good one.
I mean, to be fair, it was the entire premise of the first film. So it's not like it was a big stretch for me.
Hey, look, my heart dropped when you said it, bro. I ain't gonna lie. I was like, dang, he got us off the...
I mean, you kind of teed it up for me. I mean, it was like, you can't describe the plot of the movie without saying, well, the entire nation's been hidden for like 5 centuries.
That was great, bro. I can't lie. That was great.
Next battle. All right, Season Saul, you have the Grinch, and Jesse James, you have Dwayne Johnson. Who would win in a snowball fight? All right, so we'll flip it this time. Jesse James, you're up first. Tell us why Dwayne The Rock Johnson would win in a snowball fight.
Jamie, do you mind if I kick this one off?
I actually love it when you kick it off, Jesse.
I have a rock take, okay? I listen to a lot of rock-adjacent content, like, what? You know, pods that talk about The Rock. And there's one thing I know about The Rock. He's arguably the most petty dude in all of Hollywood.
Really?
And here's why. Do you know like when he was doing the Fast and Furious movies,
right?
It was like in his contract that he had to land as many punches as Vin Diesel. He will not lose. The Rock will never be in a movie where he is on the losing end of anything. He's very protective about his persona. Like, even with Black Adam, his latest one, it's basically he is like an unstoppable Superman. Think of any Rock movie where The Rock looks bad or The Rock loses. It doesn't exist. That's how The Rock, that's what The Rock's cooking. He, out of just sheer pettiness, And this is why I think the Rock star, like, I don't think he'll ever be like looked at as like one of the best actors in the world. I think he'll be recognized one of the biggest movie stars, but he will always cap himself because he'll never be a loser. And that not only extends to his movie roles, that extends to snowball fights. He would fight dirty and probably get lawyers involved, to be honest, to make sure that he is on the winning end of the snowball fight, if I know anything about The Rock.
All right, Season Salt, tell us why the Grinch would win in a snowball fight.
I just Googled The Rock Black Adam, since we say The Rock doesn't lose.
Yeah.
The Rock Black Adam tops our 10 worst movies ever. The Rock fails in Black Adam, possibly worst movie ever. Black Adam, the worst movie of the decade.
He's got receipts. It made like $1 billion.
Black Adam review, The Rock's big, loud supervillain hit is basically fine. What I'm saying is The Rock can lose. And I'm going to tell you why The Rock can and will lose to the Grinch, because the Grinch a cartoon. He ain't even real. In a snowball fight, he gonna shoot snowballs from out of the sky. It's gonna be crazy. The speed.
He's got a terrible heart condition.
Exactly.
He can't even. It's two times too small. How is he? Blood's not even oxygenated enough.
Because
he'd be gassed.
He stole
the Rock's working the man, out like four times a
exactly,
day.
Exactly. And the Rock can't even steal Christmas. The Grinch stole all of Christmas. So you know he's gonna be able to throw all the snowballs. He don't even like Christmas. So you know he want all the smoke with the snowballs anyway. So what I'm saying is, bro, this man literally stole Christmas. Somebody with that level of dog in them in a battle with the Rock in a snowball fight, what you talking about, bro? I don't even know what we're saying. Like the Grinch beat Santa Claus, bro. Santa Claus is so powerful, he could stop space and time for one day, and the Grinch beat Santa Claus. So you telling me he can't beat a wrestler?
And Black Adam's entire domestic box office run was eclipsed by Wakanda Forever in 2 days. So just FYI, Black Adam, while successful, quote unquote,
in 2 days. So we talk about losing.
It only made $250 million the first weekend. Jamie, land this plane.
Okay. But here's the thing, though. We're not talking about Black Adam. We're talking about a snowball fight.
That is true.
I want to bring us back to what we're talking about real quick. Now, we do know that The Rock, some interesting facts about him that I know is that he works out nonstop. Film. He only sleeps like 3 hours a day. Film. He takes 3 showers a day. He exfoliates every time he takes a shower. And this is why this is important, because The Rock is not going to have a snowball fight in a snowsuit. He's going to be shirtless. He wants to show off his tattoos. He wants to show off his muscles. So his skin is so exfoliated. Those snowballs hit him and they literally just fall. It ain't even a fight, because the snow just kind of goes away. It hits that smooth skin and it's done. The Rock is going to be so strong. He's going to have 35 snowballs to every one snowball the Grinch has. Because the Grinch's like 105 wet. And you know, he can't even hold all the snowballs. The Rock is going to take all it right. down.
Emily, final point.
I want to go back to Jesse's point that The Rock like contractually has this thing where he has to win all the time, mm-hmm. which we have proven to be false. But as you were talking about that, all I could think about was, I'll just say it, it kind of screams insecurity. So I just don't think that I think he's projecting that he's very strong. But if he was really that strong, would he need it in a contract? You know, the Grinch, as we pointed out, barely has a heart. So let's be honest, people that are mean, they're going to go after the insecurities.
You're saying the Grinch is going to fight dirty. You're saying the Grinch is fighting dirty.
I think the Grinch might kill The Rock.
Wow, this escalated. This is dramatically escalated to murder. It went from a snowball fight to The Rock being murdered.
Straight murder. You right? Straight murder.
He's going to put rocks in the snowballs.
Rocks in the snowballs. He's shifty. He's evil.
Jason, this dramatically.
This is amazing.
Yeah, I did.
Jason, who's the winner?
I don't even want to know why Jamie knows so much about the Rock's showering and exfoliating situation.
I think it's helpful knowledge. Yeah. I think it's very helpful knowledge.
She had that in her pocket for a while, waiting for this moment.
You know, guys, I've been waiting to address this. I was going to just bring it up at random later in the episode, but I do want to talk about The Rock's skincare routine.
I've been feeling down, baby. Yeah.
This was my slice, but I'm going to tell you about how many times you shower every single day.
Okay, I think that Seasoned Salt made a really good point, so we're going to give them this one.
Mess with
all right,
us.
There you go.
All right, we tied up, baby. We tied up, baby.
Dirty. All right, last round. Here we go. Seasoned Salt, you have Tom Hanks in a fat suit in a weird European accent. And then Jesse James, you have Will Ferrell in character as Elf. Who would win in a floor is lava contest? Since you won the last one, Seasoned Salt, you're up first. Tell us why Tom Hanks in a fat suit and a weird European accent would win a floor is lava contest against Will Ferrell in character as Elf.
Dang it. I was really hoping you would take this. sure. So Tom Hanks, talk about a man who really can't lose. You know, everyone loves him. He's so great at everything he does. One of the best people on the planet. You know, I can't think of anyone who doesn't like him. He's just so well loved.
Likeability does not translate to floor is lava. Trust me, I've watched enough episodes to know.
I'm setting it up. He's just great at everything he does. So I think he could walk out onto the Floor is Lava floor competition. And he would exceed all of our expectations, but we also wouldn't be surprised because it's Tom Hanks and everyone loves him and everyone knows he can do great things. This is the tough one.
Tom Hanks, everybody loves him and knows he can do great things. Okay. Great. Okay. Jesse James.
I'm so sorry, Derek.
Jesse James, tell us why.
Hey, Emily, you my dog.
I can start if you want. Emily, but listen, you my dog. I'm gonna keep it real here. I've never seen this Floor is Lava thing. So, but I'm assuming it's a little like contest. You got to work your way through a little obstacle course. Here's what I need to say.
Jamie, hold on. Can I paint a picture for the show for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you ever seen the film Elf?
Well, yeah, I see it every year, like 100 times.
You know the first couple scenes where he jumps on an iceberg and basically... Yeah,
that's it?
He basically floors lavas from the North Pole all the way to New York City pretty much effortlessly. That's the game show, what he does.
But we're not talking about Elf. We're talking about Will Ferrell in character as Elf. That's what we're talking about.
Which is what he was
but,
in Elf.
But I'm saying he's not an actual elf. So we have to make sure it's Will Ferrell, the actor character.
It's Will Ferrell, yes. Uh-huh. But listen, I've seen Elf, like I can quote it, like, you know, the back of my hand. And if he's going to go through an obstacle course like that, first of all, I don't want, I'm going to be real careful with my words here, but Tom Hanks in a fat suit, I think no matter who it is, if you're in a suit that is not your regular body, it's going to be difficult for you to move in an agile state. Okay. So that's just hard work. Will Ferrell, he's got that body suit on. Do you know how fast you can move with a body suit? Do you know how agile you are in a body suit? And did you see Will Ferrell as Elf when he maneuvered his way through all those yellow cars? I mean, it was like he was on an obstacle course and he was just working his way through downtown New York. Will Ferrell as Elf would beat anybody in this contest, especially Tom Hanks in a fat suit where no one could understand what he was saying.
Yeah, because I will say this, buoyancy does not play into Floor is Lava. Once you touch the lava, you're out of the game, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. That's just how it works.
Yeah, and Will Ferrell's got those ballet shoes on. Like that's going to help him, too.
Very nimble. Yeah. I mean, he's light on his feet.
Derek, I need you to bring this home for us please.
I'm going
to
make it really easy for y'all. I'm gonna name you two movies, and Tom Hanks was a part of those two movies. And...
Was he in a fat suit with a weird European accent?
No, but I'm going to explain to you why that's not even relevant in these two movies. So we have Forrest Gump and we have Castaway. Mm-hmm. And Forrest Gump, he was literally training as a runner because Forrest Gump would just run. He had to actually do athletic training for that. If we're talking Castaway, have you seen a picture of Tom Hanks's body in Castaway? Here, I will show it to you. That's what he looks like. The man is a training beast when it comes to doing anything. So if he wants to gain weight, he does that. When he gets in the character and does his thing, he goes crazy. But in Castaway, matter of fact, Tom Hanks went so crazy in Castaway that he had a weight loss plan in a renowned online site called Weight and Skin. And it talks about his... Tom Hanks' weight loss and diet plan and fitness routine. He actually has a fitness routine proven to help bring down diabetes. So we're saying this man with this level of commitment to any role and this man with this level of commitment to success is going to lose to a man in tights and red shoes. I don't think so. I think Tom Hanks, when have you ever seen Will Ferrell look like he could even jump over a phone book? I'll wait.
I just would like, I'd like to just talk to the judge for a second. I just want to make sure we're all staying on track here, Jason, with this, you know, all the stuff we got going on here. Because you know, Cameron did not say Tom Hanks in Castaway.
In a fat suit, but he worked out. He's working out.
Okay.
He's working out for Floor is Lava. That's what I'm saying. He is working out for Floor is Lava because he knows what's ahead of him, right? Will Ferrell is just going to show up in some green tights and some pointed red shoes, and he gonna fall off the first obstacle course because Will Ferrell don't even look like he walked to the kitchen to eat. He looked like, yeah, people bring the food
to him. Jesse, bring it home.
You know, Will Ferrell ran a sub 4-hour marathon For any non-runners out there, that is really fast.
Wow.
He's run three, I think. Okay. The same point applies.
Does he have his own weight loss and workout routine that people are
putting
out?
You don't need to lose weight. You need to run marathons.
Exactly. He needs
the picture of Castaway again.
He needs the nutrients in his body. And plus, look, Floor is Lava is a game of savvy and strategy. Tom Hanks, too nice of a guy. He's not trying to outthink.
What?
We got to go Will Ferrell and Elf here.
What happened to character doesn't determine who wins.
This is a ruthless game, Emily. It is a ruthless. Floor is Lava is a ruthless game. You either win or you're boiled alive in lava. Them's the rules. So do you want to go Mr. Nice Guy here? No, you don't.
What's up, Jason?
Okay, listen. So I watched Floor is Lava for the first time last week. Jamie, you need to watch it. It's actually really entertaining.
Yes. Peak of entertainment.
Yeah, it really is.
It's the best show on Netflix. Best movie. Better than Stranger Things.
It was our podcast that made me go listen to that, or go watch it, rather.
Good.
So this was a tough one. I'm not going to lie to you, because I have.
Really,
well, listen,
Jason?
I just have a heart. I have a heart for Tom Hanks, and it's a really good point. And I had no idea you had a workout plan. I mean, I might tap into that. And then, you know, I love Elf. So, but as far as your points go, I'm going to have to give the point to Jesse James. So,
no!
I love you guys, Derek. I love
you. You made the rational
good job.
Choice.
Derek, you really helped
I tried.
I did not.
If nothing
help
else,
at all.
Will Ferrell demonstrated in the beginning of the movie, like Jesse said.
Exactly. He Floor is Lava'd from Antarctica to the Brooklyn
to
Bridge.
New York City.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think he went a 5-minute round. Yeah,
Emily was trying to really appeal to folks' heart at the beginning there. She's just, you know, Tom Hanks is a great guy. He's good at everything.
My man was jumping over narwhals, okay? He'd be just fine on the Netflix show. Okay?
I was actually just trying to run the clock to give Derek time to think of an actually good argument. I was really taking one for the
team. That's a good play, too. That's a good play, Emily.
Yeah, because I'll be honest, I know I had nothing to start. Like, I felt like Michael Scott when he says, like, sometimes I just start a sentence and just keep talking to see if it goes somewhere.
See,
that's really, as I was talking, I was like, what is the next word to come out of my mouth?
Hey, Emily, you held it down.
Emily, to be fair, I've been doing that on this podcast ever since day one. You know, I never know.
That's
how
the secret to podcasting.
All I know is it's my turn to say something, and we're just going to see what happens here, because it could, you know, it's sometimes you got to let it rip, you know? Let the arrow draw the bow. You know what I mean? Just kind of start talking. See what happens.
That's perfect. All right. Well, that was fun. That'll do it for Epic Battle. Before we wrap things up, I want to thank Tim Keller for joining us today. Make sure to check out his latest book, Forgive, Why Should I and How Can I? It's available now. You don't want to miss it. Also, head over to relevantmagazine.com. We're covering the intersection of faith, life, and culture every day. We publish like 10, 15 articles a day during the week. You should check it out. Make relevantmagazine.com part of your browsing, or just follow us on all the socials. We're on Twitter. We're posting on Instagram, obviously Facebook, and, you know, stay in touch. If you aren't a social media person and you want to stay in touch, right there on the front page of relevantmagazine.com, you can sign up for, Relevant Today, which is our top 5 trending stories delivered to your inbox every morning. It's a great way to stay plugged in, even if you're not on social. Hey, while you're at the site, make sure to click on the magazine tab to check out the fall issue of Relevant. Well, on that note, we'll wrap things up. I'm Cameron Strang.
I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Jamie Ivey.
I'm Derek Minan.
I'm Emily Brown.
We'll see you next time. Have a great week, everyone.
For listening to the Relevant Podcast. Check out our features, interviews, and news updates every day at relevantmagazine.com. And make sure to follow Relevant on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest. For more great podcasts, browse the shows on the Relevant Podcast Network, which you can find at our site. And while you're there, don't miss the all-new era of Relevant Magazine. A new issue releases every other month at relevantmagazine.com.
The Rock's working out like 4 times a day.
Relevant Podcast Network.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.